Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Now, Health Matters, presented by SSM Health. Here's your host, KMOX Health Editor, Fred Bottomer.
Hi there. Thanks for joining me for today's show. Lots to talk about, including how the pandemic has led to many of us skipping needed medical care. Plus, new findings on heart disease and COVID-19, and a closer look at the Quarantine 15, all those pounds we've been adding on during this pandemic. But first, let's start the show the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
Let's start today's conversation with a listener question first. This listener wants to know, what are some safe summer activities to do in your medical opinion, Dr. Buchholz?
Well, I think the real answer is still, I think, unsure. The most conservative answer to that would be, you know, if not kind of minimal contact with others, at least, you know, guarded contact with others in the sense of, you know, keeping kind of a close-knit group of colleagues, friends, family members, where everybody kind of intermingles with each other, but not without minimally within a larger community. I don't know if that's really where I'd go with that personally. You know, I think big mass gatherings still are the ones I'm more worried about. So, you know, as much as I love baseball, as much as I love going to the zoo and doing other things where there's a lot of people in kind of a confined area and the most popular times, those are probably things I'd at least to start with would avoid. You know, I pull my kids out of camps for that same reason. You know, but I think going to a park, having decent distance from others, wearing your mask is a good kind of way to kind of dip your toe into kind of getting out. But I think places that have a lot of people or other things are like, I think indoor where the ventilation is really unclear or the practices aren't in place to really ensure safe distance and safety are the big ones. And I'm, you know, personally, I still haven't decided what to do, like with a swimming pool, a public swimming pool. I'm nervous about those things. I'm not saying that nervousness is right or wrong, but I think it's just dipping your toes in, see how things go. And you know, certainly, you know, I think what's important to talk about here is that our thinking about this evolved. We're now kind of liberalizing what we do. People are out. The city and county have loosened the rules as of mid-May. It seems to be so far so good with this, and that's reassuring. You know, we certainly have a bigger depth of knowledge of how things occur with COVID than we did 3 months ago, where we had no idea. We had no idea how many people had it or who had it or whether or not we had reliable tests or equipment. So, you know, the draconian measures we took 3 months ago, I don't think we need to go back to, but I don't think we need to go back to full kind of business as usual either in terms of our own activities.
Dr. Buchholz, health officials in Missouri say they've seen no new COVID-19 cases from all those Lake of the Ozarks pool parties over the Memorial Day weekend. What do you think's happening there?
Well, two things. One is, you know, it seems more evident that the vast majority of COVID infections occur in these what we call super spreader events. So a couple examples of this just that are in the news, have been in the news, is, you know, the church service in Korea, where a couple of people are infected pretty much the whole church, 1,000 people. The Champions League game in Milan that kind of led to the kind of bomb there. A couple other events kind of throughout the United States where there's a convention or a meeting where a number of people got sick. And that seems to be the kind of the vast surge in transmissions. And so, the common traits of that, for the most part, have been, confined areas where people are close together, to some degree indoor, but not all the way, because, the soccer match in Milan was outdoors. But not every event like that caused spread. And so, I think the thing with the Lake of the Ozarks is, so far, again, so far so good. I'm not ready to say that, that nothing's going to happen from there. I think if in a couple of weeks nothing happens, I think we can say that we dodged a bullet. That being said, I think it's still one of those things that just you're asking for trouble in that type of circumstance. So just because you got lucky doesn't mean it's safe. And I think that's important to make that distinction. And those people better think they're lucky stars, or, maybe go to a casino or do the lottery, because they got really lucky. That could have been very, very dangerous. And so far, so good. Let's see how it plays out. But I think just saying it didn't happen shouldn't make us all feel safer from that standpoint.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a slew care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Let's talk a little bit more about super spreaders. Hong Kong University's Benjamin Cowling did a study that showed 20% of cases accounted for an astonishing 80% of transmissions.
We know on average for COVID-19 that one person might spread to two or three others if we weren't taking any actions to try and stop transmission. A super spreading event is when a person infects way more than maybe they would do on average. So maybe one person infects 6, 8, 10 more people, or even more than that. Of people that are infected, they quite often probably been infected in a super spreading event, because these things do happen and cause a lot of transmission. In order to have transmission, you need a person who's relatively more contagious, and also the opportunity for them to pass on infection to lots of other people. It is to some extent unusual, but it's actually happening enough to keep an epidemic going and to sustain an epidemic.
I guess the million-dollar question is, how do you tell who's a super spreader before it's being spread?
Yeah, that is a million-dollar question. And just because of my own inner nerdiness, I just have to say that this is proof, again, of something called the Pareto Principle, which is generally the most natural phenomenon. 80% of the evidence you see is caused by 20% of the people at risk. So like the fact that they said 20% or 80% of the infections are from 20% of the people is kind of goes along a fairly natural phenomenon. So that just is kind of interesting to see. But you're right. I mean, going back to the Ozarks example, like that had the potential to be there, but it didn't happen for reasons we probably don't understand and probably will never understand. I mean, that's kind of the magic of nature and how insanely complicated the world, let alone medicine, is. But you don't know where that is. And that's kind of going back to this broader concept of, and kind of nebulous concept of herd immunity, is you don't know where that infection starts, and it happens at random. And things that you think are an emergency and you scramble and try to kind of intervene end up not being an emergency for reasons we don't know. And that kind of happened with Ebola 2014, 2013, whenever that was pretty prominent. There was a significant concern, and we started having cases in the United States, but never really spread. And you can argue and say, well, that was because of the big public health measures that were undertaken at the time, or it may have just been random chance, and it's hard to tell. Still kind of going back to the point of the Ozarks, is you just don't know. And I think at this point, having these mass events or, events where a lot of people are in a confined space is just flirting with danger. I don't think we're ready to do that yet. Once we get some degree of herd immunity, that's when or a vaccine, and you have a certain percentage of the population is vaccinated. That's where really you can say there's some safety in going out in those numbers. But not saying you have to wait for that. But that would be kind of the easiest decision to make if that was the case.
Dr. Buchholz, let's talk a little bit about all the protests we've seen across the nation and in the St. Louis area over this past week. Here's CBS News correspondent Carter Evans.
At packed protests around the country, thousands shoulder to shoulder, many without masks. Exactly what we've been told not to do in this time of COVID.
I am seriously worried about what's going to happen 10 days from now when we start to see those cases rise dramatically.
That concern now highlighted in a new study in The Lancet, which found that without a mask, the risk of transmitting COVID is more than 17%. With a mask, it drops to 3%.
We gotta stop this!
And while the hugs between police and protesters and loud cries of support might be heartwarming,
this is our city!
People out there screaming at the top of their lungs, this can't be a good thing.
The more droplets that go into the air, the more the potential for spread.
Even more serious, research shows the virus itself may discriminate.
You know, the paradox here is that we're protesting because of unequal treatment. At the same time, this virus is saying, I don't care that you're African American. I'm going to disproportionately affect you.
Dr. Buchholz, a whole lot to talk about there. Where do you want to start?
I'm not sure. I think first, let me say I would wholeheartedly endorse everybody getting tested that were involved, police and the protesters. If we have that testing capability, all the better. I'm not sure if it's there yet, at least in this region. I think it's important, you know, we kind of treat these as two separate events, you know, the people, the significant portion of our population protesting about, you know, systemic injustice and police discrimination and violence and COVID. And I think it's important to realize these are totally related events. Think about St. Louis. Let's just take everything else. Let's have a couple clear things. St. Louis remains, unfortunately, a fairly segregated city. You know, there's clearly a north and south divide. And let's talk about COVID, because COVID clearly has disproportionately affected the Black community in St. Louis. If you think about healthcare access, think about all the hospitals and the hospital systems in St. Louis. I work at St. Louis University, which is right in the heart of Midtown or the central quarter of St. Louis. Colleagues at Barnes is in the central west end, so the central part of St. Louis. You drive on Interstate 64, or Highway 40, whatever you want to call it, and you go out about 10 miles, there's another couple of hospitals, and you keep on driving that. And most of the hospitals in the region kind of follow US 40 or Interstate 64. There's some in South County, and we have two in North County, Christian and DePaul. And, you know, in terms of clinics and medical access, it's much easier to get care and access and see a physician or a nurse practitioner in a clinic in that central quarter or the southwest quarter that it is in the northern quarter of St. Louis. And it's no surprise that DePaul and Christian Northwest were the two hardest hit hospitals of COVID. And then Barnes and St. Louis University were probably behind that, as well as St. Mary's. So, you know, these go hand in hand. The systemic issues that are in this region were reflected in COVID, as with every other health outcome. And so these go hand in hand, and I think the medical community is coalescing around the idea that, yes, you know, these mass gatherings, you know, certainly increase the risk of COVID. And you know, the pictures I've seen, and again, I don't think there's really any data one way or the other to know what's going on. You know, a large number are wearing face masks, which is nice to see, but I don't know if that's just a sampling bias. But this is a massive public health issue, and I think, as the reporter said, COVID affects everybody. It doesn't go across class or race or socioeconomic status. And public health for one group of individuals affects the public health of all of us. And so, you know, in my mind, I think it's important, being an advocate for healthcare for everybody, that we recognize that this disparity is a problem for all of us and isn't right. And then I've dealt with this my entire career. I think the most interesting thing talking about this with you, Fred, and with others is, you know, the surprising fact that COVID affected certain communities more disproportionately than others. In my work, in my experience, this is no surprise. In fact, I could have easily predicted this if you asked me. I think that's a gross injustice and a stain on our society. And let me be clear, I'm culpable in that. I've not done enough to advocate for that or do something to change that. And, you know, I think it's a reflection of our healthcare system, which I am a part of. So I recognize my own role in this. Try not to be a hypocrite in that stance.
So your advice then to anyone that wants to go out and protest is what?
Yeah, wear a face mask. Bring hand sanitizer with you so you can wash your hands frequently. I appreciate the symbols of contact, but I think that needs to be limited. If you're going to bring equipment, you know, or food with you, just make sure that you know, you try not to share it. Try to keep it in separate bags. Those would be the main things. And then try to keep your distance as much as you can. You know, some have been really efficient in trying to kind of keep separation of, you know, at least 3 feet from other people. The issue with mass crowds is always the mob can take over, and that can be a problem. You know, there's no control over that. But, you know, just so everybody, I want everybody to be safe. And hopefully most of this will be peaceful on both ends. And that's what I truly hope for.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for all your time. Really do appreciate it again.
Yeah, appreciate it as well, Fred. Thanks for letting me have a voice, and hopefully this has been helpful. So thank you.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up next, we'll talk about heart disease and COVID-19. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Some new findings regarding heart disease and COVID-19 patients. Let's talk about it with Dr. Ellie Azrak. Dr. Azrak is a cardiologist at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. Dr. Azrak, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Fred.
I wanted to talk with you about this new report out that talks about right ventricle enlargement as a possible major predictor for mortality among COVID patients. What are you seeing?
Yes, this is an interesting study. You know, as you know, our knowledge of the epidemiology and the clinical features of acute COVID infections is evolving and changing all the time. This particular study is interesting in that it shows that given the limitations of a study, it's a small group of 105 patients at one hospital in New York, but it does show that right ventricular heart failure is a significant predictor of a poor outcome in acute COVID infection. So it teaches us to look carefully at the right ventricle of the heart when we face deteriorating COVID patients to understand how the right ventricle works.
How common is right ventricle heart failure?
Right ventricle heart failure happens in a specific set of situations where there's a lot of stress on the right ventricle of the heart, whether it is from a heart attack or lack of blood supply to that particular chamber, or through a secondary mechanism such as a very high pressure in the lungs or in the left side of the heart that causes the right side of the heart to fail. The purpose of the right side of the heart is to pump the blood into the lungs to get new oxygen, and then from the lung to the left heart to get pumped to the system.
So of the 105 patients in this study, 32 of them, or 31%, had dilation of the right ventricle based on an echocardiogram, and of those, 41% died by the end of the study period, compared to 11% of those without right ventricle enlargement. So what do we do with this information?
Yes, and this is definitely a significant discrepancy between the two groups. So in the group which had marked right ventricular enlargement, a much higher percentage ended up dying, which means they were probably much, much sicker than the other group. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that right ventricular failure was the primary cause of death, but it can give us insight into the ongoings of what is happening in those patients with the acute infection. Is there blood clots in the lungs that are not being detected, and they're only being detected through the failure of the right ventricle? Is the pressure in the lungs so high, or are they requiring such very high ventilator settings that are raising the pressure and causing the right ventricle to fail? All of these questions are probably in need of further investigation. But what we can learn from this particular study is that, first of all, doing what we call point-of-care ultrasound on the heart, which is bedside ultrasound, to look at the left side of the heart and as well as the right side of the heart. So that's the one thing. It's important to do a point-of-care ultrasound in the intensive care unit in particular. The second part is to pay attention to the right ventricle and see how it's functioning, because now we know that if it's functioning poorly, that subset of patients is at much higher risk for mortality.
Do people know ahead of time if they have trouble with their right ventricle?
Usually, the majority of individuals who have right ventricular failure usually get it after having a problem with the left side of the heart for long enough time that now the right side of the heart is failing. There is a minority of situations where there's an isolated failure of the right ventricle of the heart, and that is usually either when there's lack of blood supply to the right ventricle from either a blockage or a heart attack that that affects the right side of the heart in isolation, or sometimes when there is an acute rise in the pressures inside the lungs that cause a very high resistance against which the right ventricle has to pump, and that makes it fail and dilate and basically fail very quickly.
So what message is it that you want heart patients to know when it comes to coronavirus, COVID-19, and what they should be doing or looking out for?
Yes, so caretakers have learned tremendously over the past few weeks on how to deal with acute coronavirus infection. Now we know, and the professional society guidelines also alert us that we need to do point-of-care ultrasound on the sicker patients, especially those admitted to the intensive care unit. The second point, the teaching point here, is that we need to pay attention to the right ventricle just as much as we need to pay attention to the left ventricle of the heart because of the prognosis implications. The third point here is that to also look beyond the right ventricle of the heart and see to figure out what is going on with the lungs. Are the lungs part of the problem that is driving the right ventricle to fail, and then why? We know in acute COVID infections, blood clots can happen in both small blood vessels as well as larger blood vessels. So looking for blood clots in the blood vessels of the lungs, blood vessels of the heart, and understanding the reasons behind the right ventricle failure are probably very important.
So your message to people with heart problems is continue doing all those things you need to do to keep safe and try and prevent coronavirus?
And it is obviously, of course, and obviously very critical that we not abandon the evidence-driven, proven treatments for heart failure, which we strongly recommend. And people should not be quitting or changing their medications unless they discuss that with their physicians. We know that acute COVID infections can affect the heart, and people need to be very careful about changing their medicines, as well as taking all the precautions necessary if they have underlying heart condition to stay isolated socially and distance themselves and protect themselves.
And don't be afraid to go to the hospital or go to the ER if you think you're having a heart problem.
If you're having any change in symptoms that could be related to your heart, chest pains, shortness of breath, swelling that's out of proportion to what you would expect, please call your doctor, and or if the problem is getting worse, go to the emergency room. We can take care of you. You will be safe. We have the capacity. The healthcare system is able to take care of you.
Dr. Azarak, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, Fred.
Dr. Eli Azarak is a cardiologist at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. Coming up, are you skipping any medical appointments or needed medical treatments because of the coronavirus pandemic? We'll talk about that with an emergency room physician at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. A new survey finds nearly half of all Americans say they're stressing out or skipping medical appointments because of the pandemic. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Cassandra Haddox. Dr. Haddox is the director of the emergency department at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. Dr. Haddox, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the skipping or delaying of getting medical care. What are you seeing there?
So we are seeing, in the emergency department, we're seeing a 40 to 50% volume decrease that started in March when COVID, you know, we started seeing patients and we started seeing the big stay at home and the push. And I think we've seen a lot of strokes and heart attacks that aren't coming in. And we know that those patients are still out there. We know that people are still having strokes and still having heart attacks and still having other issues, but they're afraid to come to the ER, and it's, you know, delaying their care, delaying their diagnosis, which is affecting their health.
Yeah, let's talk about the dangers of delaying care. What do we need to know?
So the dangers of delaying care is there are some things like strokes and heart attacks and surgical cases that if you intervene quickly within a certain time frame, we can, you know, reverse it. We can give TPA for a stroke. We can put a stent in for a heart attack that prevents any problems down the road. But if you delay the care and don't get the treatment you need for whatever condition emergently, then it's going to cause a lot of problems down the road.
So what do you want people to know? What are you advising people?
So I want people to know that if they feel like they need to go to the ER, go to the ER. And I think part of the reason people aren't going is, one, it's twofold. One, they aren't going because they're just afraid they're going to get COVID, right? We're telling people to stay home. And if they go out, and especially if they go to the hospital, they're afraid that they're going to be exposed to it and they're going to get it. And then the second fold is, two, that they just don't want to go out. But as far as the COVID stuff, as far as the fear of getting COVID from going to the hospital, you know, we have put things in place to help with that. So the providers in the ER, the nursing staff, the physicians, everybody is masked. And we have PPE in place to protect ourselves, but to protect our patients. We ask that the patients wear a mask. We mask them if they don't have a mask upon arrival to the emergency department. And that's for their own safety. And we also have a no visitor policy. And that is, you know, everybody wants to have their family come to the ER because it's scary. Right? Like nobody wants to go to the ER. It's a scary place sometimes because you don't know what's going on with you. But the visitor policy is to keep, you know, the patients safe because it limits exposure of everyone.
Dr. Haddox, tell us a little bit more about the separation of patients.
Okay. Yeah. So that is what we did from the very beginning. So some people may have seen the tents outside hospitals and they've heard about them, and that was to keep the potential COVID patients separate from the non-COVID patients. So some places have tents. Fortunately, at our department, we have a completely separate area that we're able to put these patients. And the providers in those areas have appropriate PPE. So they have appropriate masks and gowns to keep from transmitting, you know, seeing a patient, and they can go to the next patient. And it's to limit the risk of exposing any other patients to whatever was in the patient's room they were in. And it's very separate, you know, it's a whole different area of the department. And most of the departments are doing that. I think almost all departments are doing that. They either have a tent for a triage area or just a separate triage area. And then they have just a separate care area that they're keeping all the potential COVID patients in, away from the non-COVID patients. Because the last thing we want is for you to come to the hospital without COVID and get COVID. So we're doing everything we can to protect our patients. If patients know that, you know, they're afraid to come to the hospital because they're afraid they're going to get COVID, they're afraid of going out. If they know that, one, delaying their care can cause, you know, huge problems down the road with their medical health. And then two, if they know we are keeping them separate and we're trying to protect them that way, I think that would help ease their fear of going to the hospital. Or that's the hope.
We're talking with Dr. Cassandra Haddox. Dr. Haddox is the Emergency Department Director at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. Dr. Haddox, talk to me about stress and mental health concerns that you're seeing.
So we are seeing a little bit of an increase, and I think we'll see it even more further down the road. I think where this is also fresh, you know, a lot of those patients that have lost their jobs or they've lost loved ones or they've had any emotion, you know, there's so much. It's so hard right now for people. A lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people have lost insurance. They've lost family members. And it's, how do you cope with that? And we've seen some of those patients in the department, you know, they are just very stressed. Life is really hard right now. But I think further down the road in the next few months, we're going to see even more of it. And that, you know, it's mental health issues, it's substance abuse issues, of the different ways people are trying to cope with what's going on in their lives right now.
Those type of issues, emotional, mental, substance abuse, those sort of things. It's hard to figure out when you should actually seek help, isn't it?
It is, because everybody has what they perceive as their threshold for getting help. You know, with mental health, obviously, if at any point you feel that you're at harm to yourself or that you don't trust yourself, you should seek medical attention. You know, if you feel like you're going to harm yourself or harm others, you know, you need to seek medical attention. We're here to help you with that. As far as the substance abuse, it's kind of along the same lines. You know, substance abuse is a little harder. It usually goes hand in hand with mental health, but not always. But the bottom line is if you do not feel safe, if you feel you need help, you need to seek attention.
Do you think substance abuse will be going up? People might be abusing the drugs they're getting?
I think so, because I think everybody copes with stress in a different way. And unfortunately, one of the ways people cope with stress is substance abuse.
So what tips might you have for people to ease their stress or help them through this?
I think the things to do, reach out to your primary care physician if you have one. Reach out to, you know, mental health resources in the community. There are some free mental health resources in the community. And the best place to find that is, you know, you can try your public health department, you can try your hospitals, you can call and try and get it there, but reach out to friends and family. If you have any type of a support system, reach out to your friends and family. Reach out to coworkers if you can. If you can somehow find a landline for somebody to help you through this stress, it's going to help you immensely. And then exercise, try and get sleep, you know, the basic things to help with just your mental health, not alone with your physical health.
Dr. Haddix, thanks a lot for your time. Anything else you want to add?
No, I just want people to know that, you know, the ERs are open. Your primary care physicians are seeing patients that may look different. You have to, you know, we want you to wear a mask. We want you to use social distancing. We want you to wash your hands. But the bottom line is, if you need medical attention, please seek it. Please do not delay your medical care because of fear. We know people are apprehensive, and that's okay to be apprehensive, but please seek medical attention if you need it. We are here to help you.
Dr. Haddix, thanks a lot for your time. Really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Cassandra Haddix is the director of the emergency department at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. Coming up, if you feel like you've been gaining weight over the past 8 weeks or so of staying at home orders, you're not alone. We'll talk about that as we continue Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Have you heard of the Quarantine 15? Many of us who think they've been gaining weight over the past few months know exactly what we're talking about. Here to discuss it is Dr. Megan Renner. Dr. Renner is a family medicine physician with the SSM Health Medical Group in St. Charles County. Dr. Renner, thanks for joining us.
Of course.
So tell us, what is the Quarantine 15?
Well, lots of patients are finding themselves gaining a little bit of weight while they've been cooped up in the house, and they liken it to the freshman 15 that they'd seen in college and have called it the Quarantine 15, as you have obviously heard.
What are you hearing from your patients, or any of your patients telling you about that?
There have been a few, but for the most part, I think that they are in the minority. Thankfully, that really hasn't been a huge issue that I've been seeing with most of my patients. Many patients have been quarantined at home. A lot of them are really using this time to find creative ways to stay active and have been able to keep their weight stable.
So what do you think is contributing to the weight gain in those people who say they are having a problem with gaining some extra weight?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there aren't great studies about this yet since this is all very new, but from what I've been hearing, the patients who have been struggling with weight gain are reporting obstacles such as mindless eating, spending more time watching TV, decreased exercise, equipment access, you know, their gyms have been closed. The stay-at-home orders have had some impact on that, and patients were afraid to leave the house. Additionally, a lot of people are just working from home and having a more sedentary lifestyle, whereas they were more active when they were at the office.
What about alcohol consumption?
Yeah, sure. Alcohol can definitely contribute. So if folks are turning to alcohol to keep themselves busy, then they certainly might find that their waistline is suffering because of it.
I know there's a lot of concern, Dr. Renner, about obesity being a risk factor for COVID-19. So I guess for those people who are already having trouble with their weight, this can only complicate matters, don't you think?
Well, again, I think the studies are still ongoing. We do know that obesity is a risk factor for many health conditions. And so if someone already struggles with weight, then this is definitely a good time that they can work on trying to develop some new fitness routines and work on some weight loss.
Tell us about that. What are you advising your patients who say they may be gaining weight during this quarantine period? What do you want them to do?
Well, I think right now is a great time to find a healthy way to find some more exercise. You know, maybe this is the time to start that walking program you've been meaning to start, dust off the bicycles from storage, even exploring some of the free workout videos online or even workout DVDs. Those are all really good ways that people can stay active. I tell my patients all the time, it doesn't matter what you do to move your body, you just have to find something that you enjoy that's safe and a healthy way to stay active. And there's a lot of things you can do without leaving the house.
I guess another thing you might want to think about is if your home is your office now, maybe don't make your office in the kitchen.
That's a great idea.
What about meal planning? How important might meal planning be?
I think meal planning is great. That's actually one of the things that I usually touch on with my patients that are trying to lose weight. If you take the time to think about what you're going to eat for the week and get the meals ready, you find yourself eating healthier. You snack less, and a lot of the times we take part in less mindless eating, which definitely could contribute to weight gain.
So, Dr. Renner, what's your basic advice then to people that are listening that say, I think I'm gaining weight while I'm being a lot less active these days?
Well, thankfully, this has been a pretty short period, and most likely the weight gain can be easily reversed by just incorporating some healthy activities, start that walking program, come up with a creative way to stay active while staying safe and staying healthy.
And I think maybe when people end up going back to the office, they're going to find a lot less opportunities for food in the office, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. I think a lot of the offices are putting some restrictions on the cafeterias and areas where people previously congregated. So meal prepping is going to be really important to make sure that we have healthy choices when we're at the office.
Dr. Renner, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Megan Renner is a family medicine physician with the SSM Health Medical Group in St. Charles County. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If you want to hear parts of this show again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. Or you can download the radio.com app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join us again next week at the same time for another edition of Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices, anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode, and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.